Hello, this is a show from Radio. We're a group of stations bringing new and forgotten ways of making radio to our listeners.
Delta 2 Yankee, Juliet Romeo.
Each week we give artists the challenge to make radio that works across the whole of Europe and beyond.
Delta 2 Yankee, Delta 2 Yankee, Juliet Romeo.
Are you up for it?
Не ти кажав, шетав на кај Верата в Тали Джулев и од една страна мајка со мало детенце има балон. И балонов им летна на улица и застана една кола, застана втора кола, ама во меѓу време балонов отиде на другата страна, на другата лента од улица. И таму пак ги пуштија да поминат. Мислам дека цел свет застана за балонот, ама на крајден дибек се најде со джип, отиде и отпукна балонот. И вага, стоиш кул копано место. Did I tell you this story about the mother and the child, and they had a balloon, like a big yellow balloon, and it went on the street, and one car stopped, another car stopped for it. Passerbys, they also stopped. They wanted to help the mother. This was a really small kid, like 2 years old or something. And then a man with a huge car, he didn't stop. He just ran over the balloon. And it's like bang! And the whole world stopped for this balloon, except this rich man with a big car. It's pretty shitty, right?
Yeah. It's pretty.
I think about it like all the time.
Bizarre.
Yeah. The whole world stopped for a balloon. Would you stop your car if there was a balloon on the road? A big yellow, red balloon on the road?
Probably. A yellow one like your t-shirt right now.
Yeah, this is a very old t-shirt.
With the... I thought it was the coyote, but...
I don't know, it's some old cartoon character. But I don't even remember the characters anymore. I don't have knowledge about it. The knowledge like the balloon, bah!
It just went. It just went, bah!
Yeah. Do you want me to read a poem, my favorite poem?
Of course.
It's a poem from Elizabeth Bishop. It's called At the Fish Houses. And it starts like this. Although it's a cold evening, down by one of the fish houses, an old man sits netting. His net, in the gloaming, almost invisible, a dark purple, and his shuttle worn and polished. The air smells so strong of codfish, it makes one's nose run and one's eyes water. The five fish houses have steeply peaked roofs, and narrow, cleated gangplanks slant up the storerooms in the gables for the wheelbarrows pushed up and down on. All is silver, the heavy surface of the sea swelling slowly as if considering spilling over. It's opaque, but the silver of the benches, the lobster pots and masts scattered among the wild jagged rocks, they are of an apparent translucence. Like the small old buildings with an emerald moss growing on the shore walls. The big fish tubs are completely lined with layers of beautiful herring scales, and the wheelbarrows are similarly plastered with creamy iridescent coats of mail with small iridescent flies crawling on them. Up on the little slope behind the houses, set in a sparse bright sprinkle of grass, is an ancient wooden capstan, cracked, with two long bleached handles and some melancholy stains like dried blood, where the ironwork has rusted. The old man accepts a lucky strike. He was a friend of my grandfather. We talk of the decline in the population and of codfish and herring, and he waits for a herring boat to come in. There are seconds on his vest and on his thumb. He has scrapped the scales, the principal beauty, from an unnumbered fish with a black old knife, the blade of which is almost worn away. Down at the water's edge, at the place where they haul up the boats, up the long ramp descending into the water, thin silver tree trunks are laid horizontally across the grey stones, down and down, at intervals of 4 or 5 feet. Cold, dark, deep and absolutely clear, element unbearable to no mortal, to fish and to seals. One seal particularly, I have seen here evening after evening. He was curious about me. He was interested in music. Like me, a believer in total immersion. So I used to sing him baptized songs. I also sang A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. He stood up in the water and regarded me steadily, moving his head a little. Then he would disappear, then suddenly emerge, almost in the same spot, with a sort of shrug as if it were against his better judgment. Cold, dark, deep, and absolutely clear, the clear, grey, icy water, back behind us, the dignified, tall firs begin, bluish. Associating with their shadows, a million Christmas trees stand waiting for Christmas. The water seems suspended above the rounded grey and blue-grey stones. I have seen it over and over, the same sea, the same, slightly indifferently swinging above the stones. Icily free above the stones, and then the world. If you should dip your hand in, your wrist would ache immediately. Your bones would begin to ache and your hand would burn, as if the water were a transmutation of fire that feeds on stones and burns with a dark grey flame. If you tasted it, it would first taste bitter, then briny, then surely burn your tongue. It is like what we imagine knowledge to be, dark, salt, clear, moving, utterly free, drawn from the cold hard mouth of the world, derived from the rocky breasts, forever flowing and drawn, and since our knowledge is historical, flowing and flown.
To read poetry. That was a disaster. Do you want me to read a short story?
From
it's a short one, a really short one from Franz Kafka.
I'd like that very much.
It's called Before the Law. Или перед законом. Yeah. So before the law sits a gatekeeper. To this gatekeeper comes a man from the country who asks to gain entry into the law. But a gatekeeper says that he cannot grant him entry at the moment. The man thinks about it and then asks if he will be allowed to come in later on. It is possible, says the gatekeeper. But not now. Not now. At the moment, the gate to the law stands open, as always, and the gatekeeper walks to the side. So the man bends over in order to see through the gate into the inside. When the gatekeeper notices that, he laughs and says, "If it tempts you so much, try it in spite of my prohibition. But take note, I'm powerful, and I'm only the most lowly gatekeeper." But from room to room stand gatekeepers, each more powerful than the other. I can't endure even one glimpse of the third. The man from the country has not expected such difficulties. The law should always be accessible for everyone, he thinks. But as he now looks more closely at the gatekeeper in his fur coat, at his large pointed nose and his long, thin, black Tartar's beard, he decides that it would be better to wait until he gets permission to go inside. The gatekeeper gives him a stool and allows him to sit down at the side in front of the gate. And there he sits for days and years. He makes many attempts to be let in, and he wears the gatekeeper out with his requests. The gatekeeper often interrogates him briefly, questioning him about his homeland and many other things, but they're indifferent questions. The kind great man put, and at the end he always tells him once more that he cannot let him inside yet. The man who has equipped himself with many things for his journey spends everything, no matter how valuable, to win over the gatekeeper. The latter takes it all, but as he does so, says, "I'm taking this only so that you do not think you have failed to do anything." During the many years, the man observes the gatekeeper almost continuously. He forgets the other gatekeepers, and this one seems to him the only obstacle for him to entry into the law. He curses the unlucky circumstance. In the first years, thoughtlessly and out loud, later as he grows old, he still mumbles to himself. He becomes childish, and since in the long years studying the gatekeeper, he has come to know the fleas in his fur collar. He even asked the fleas to help him persuade the gatekeeper. And finally, his eyesight grows weak, and he does not know whether things are really darker around him or whether his eyes are merely deceiving him, but he recognizes now in the darkness an illumination which breaks extinguishably out of the gate to the law. Now he no longer has much time to live. Before his death, he gathers in his head all his experiences of the entire time up into one question, which he has not yet put to the gatekeeper. He waves to Kim, and since he can no longer lift up his stiffening body, the gatekeeper has to bend way down to him, for the great difference has changed things to the disadvantage of the man. "What do you still want to know, then?" asks the gatekeeper. "You're insatiable." "Everyone strives after the law," says the man. "So how is that in these many years no one except me has requested entry?" The gatekeeper sees that the man is already dying, and in order to reach his diminishing sense of hearing, he shouts at him. "Here no one else can gain entry, since this entrance was assigned only to you. I'm going now to close it."
Thank you.